Thinking a wedding planner isn't in your budget? Think again. Did you know that beyond this podcast, I offer virtual wedding planning coaching? This is something perfect for your needs and your budget. It's not a stale digital course. It's dynamic, it's live, and it's all about empowering you. Together, we'll keep your wedding planning vibe light, fun, and totally dialed in. I'll be your go-to wedding planner right in your pocket, real-time access, just a phone tap or Zoom away. You'll get all my tools. I will personalize them for you, and you're not going to have the hefty price tag of a traditional wedding planner. So save your cash, ditch the stress, and make your wedding planning a journey to remember. For more info, you can slide into my DMs on Instagram. You can go to the bigweddingplanningpodcast.com or just shoot me an email. I'm here for you. Let's make your wedding epic. Lovey, lovey show.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just a wedding planner, tearing it up. Listen.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And my name is Justine Carino.
Hi, Justine.
Hi, Michelle.
You are first time on the pod and a co-host for a Yawa, and I have to tell you, that's pretty damn special.
I am beyond excited and honored. I've been thinking about this all week, getting amped to answer some of these questions.
Yay! Well, okay, so Nicole introduced us.
Yes, I love Nicole.
Nicole Baker. She is fantastic and she is so motivating. And she was like, hey, I love your podcast. And I think I should come on and talk about perfectionism and how that shows up in wedding planning and what it does to wedding planning. And I was like, that's frigging brilliant. And so there it is. Episode number 309 titled, Are You a Perfectionist?
Love it.
And after we recorded, I always ask, like, is there anybody you think I should have on the podcast? Or, you know, and she said, yeah, you need to have Justine. And I think you should do a Yawa, you know, centered around mental health. So here you are. And thank you, Nicole.
Yes. Thank you, Nicole. I am so pumped because, yeah, I was a bride at one point. I work with a lot of 20 and 30 somethings that are brides and planning. So I see a lot of this stuff come up and it's really stressful and causes a lot of anxiety for people.
Yeah, I did a reel the other day about it because it's just like there's so much pressure. There's so much, so many expectations. And I think this is one of the parts of wedding planning. Like, I think everybody has heard about Bridezilla, right? In air quotes, by the way, I'm doing air quotes, Bridezilla. And I always get asked as a wedding planner, oh my God, how many Bridezillas have you had? You know, and I'm like, I've actually never had a Bridezilla. One, because I really vet my clients strongly, but I don't really ever get approached by any. And I really think that it's, I know they're out there. I mean, I know there are some Bridezillas out there, but I also think that it's kind of like this label that in this case, women are getting based on reacting to all of the pressure and the stress. I try not to use the S word, but around wedding planning.
100%.
It's something that they don't expect, but it happens.
Yes. Yes. You know, I totally agree because when we are put under stress or pressure, sometimes ugly sides of us come out and the need to control comes out because control and anxiety are best friends. Our anxiety feels better when we're in control. So we try to control as much as we can to alleviate the anxiety, but then that comes off as bridezilla. She's so controlling. She has to have it this way. She has to have it that way. And they're misread. These brides are misread of, oh my goodness, she's so mean. She's so controlling. She's such this. She's such that. Can I curse on your show?
Yeah, I do it all the time.
She's such a bitch, right? Yeah, but really behind all of that is this fear, this anxiety, this lack of control. So they compensate being more controlling. So I think you're so right with that.
Yeah, it just sucks. And I want anybody planning a wedding, whether you identify as a bride or a groom, a marrier, it comes out in everyone. And so before we jump into all this, because what I love here is that I was able to reach out to my audience, and as usual, you all friggin' are amazing and get back to me, and just ask, like, are you going through anything that you want to talk about or have Justine answer for you or get help with? And I had quite a few people respond. So this is fantastic. I appreciate you all. I usually always put a call out on my Instagram for that. So if you're not following me on Instagram, you're missing out. Follow the Big Wedding Planning Podcast on Instagram. Okay. Okay. So, and by the way, Justine, you are a licensed mental health counselor. You're a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
And you have a private practice in White Plains, New York. How long have you been doing this?
I have had my private practice for about 4 years. I have been a practicing licensed therapist for about 10 years now.
Okay.
So I love what I do. I'm actually obsessed. I'm one of those few people in the world that gets to say they love their job, they love their career. Like, I wake up feeling great about my day, and I think that's such a blessing. And I'm completely obsessed in a healthy way with my clients and what I'm helping them work on. So I love my job. I've had my practice for about 4 years now, and I really specialize in treating anxiety disorders, but I also treat depression. I do couples work and I do family work. So a lot of relationship stuff. And, you know, people learn through me that anxiety and depression can directly impact our relationships with our significant other, our family members, our kids, if we're a parent. So I just love helping people get unstuck when they feel either stuck with an emotion or stuck in a relationship.
That's really important work. And then you also have your own podcast. Tell us quickly about your podcast.
I do. I have a podcast called Thoughts from the Couch.
It's such a good name. It's such a good title, Thoughts from the Couch.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really started during the pandemic. Like, I had this fun little list of things I wanted to talk about and people I wanted to interview in my circle of colleagues and therapists and different topics that I thought would be fun. And then it grew and I love doing it. So it really is based on anxiety management with the theme of people pleasers, perfectionists, overachievers, and how anxiety can relate to the people pleaser, the perfectionist, the overachiever. And so I interview a lot of guests in the wellness industry that can relate and share stories about how to cope with all of that. And then I have some solo episodes where I give out some anxiety management tips.
I love that. That's great. So check Justine's podcast out. Okay. So Justine, before we get into these questions, a little bit of housekeeping. I want to thank my new Patreon members, but before I thank my new Patreon members, I have a lot of my Patreon members who have been with me for a long time getting married this month. In October, and we'll be married when this podcast episode releases. And so I want to give a really special shout out to Anne, who got married on October 9th. Kristen and Rob, who also got married on October 9th. Lindsay Liardi, who's been on the podcast a few times, who got married on October 21st. Tess, who is getting married October 29th, and Carissa also getting married on October 29th. I am going to, like, if they, these people in particular are always on my happy hour. I do a monthly happy hour on Zoom with my Patreon members who pay $6.99 or more per month. And these people in particular are almost always at my happy hours. So I'm like, if you all leave, like, it's going to be on my, I mean, there are others. I know a lot of you listening, you join me in my happy hours, but you know these people. I'm just so excited for them. I'm so excited for them. And we always have so much fun. So that being said, I do want to thank my newest members, Jeannie B, Jill G, Katie D, Hannah B, and Sarah M. They are my newest Patreon members, and they get 2 ad-free episodes per month that nobody else listens to, only Patreon members, and that once a month happy hour. And I really, really appreciate everyone's support. And if you are getting a lot out of this podcast, please consider joining Patreon. It's $6.99 a month, or if you pay 1 year up front, it's $79.69 for an entire year. You can't get a wedding planner for that much. You just can't.
You can't.
You can't. You can't. So thank you all so much. And reviews on Apple Podcasts. So this is when I read reviews. And I don't know the last time I've only had one review to read, but I only have one. So I want to ask you listening right now to get on your phone and go to Apple Podcasts and please write a review. It is so important and it helps grow my audience. And the better I can grow my audience, the better the podcast can be for so many amazing reasons. And it just helps others out there who are planning their weddings find the podcast. And you all know listening that they need this podcast in their lives if they're planning their weddings. It's just the way it is. That's literally what this podcast is about, is to help people planning their weddings. So would you like to read the review, Justine?
I would love to. Okay, this is from Jordan. And Jordan says, I am a wedding photographer, almost college graduate, and a wedding-obsessed crazy person. Love that. Although I'm not yet engaged, I have extensively researched wedding hacks, tips, and everything else under the sun. And I cannot tell you how much I love this podcast. I often have engaged young friends with questions as well as clients who are looking for direction, and this is the first place I tell them to look. It is a collection of funny, informative, and easy-to-listen content that has expanded my love and knowledge of weddings more than any other podcast, video, or blog. If you're thinking about listening, just do it. Join the club. Oh, wow, what a review.
It's a beautiful review. Thank you so much, Jordan. I really appreciate that. Thank you. And thanks for reading it so beautifully, Justine.
You're more than welcome. I'm glad I could help.
Glad you could help. Okay. So let's get to, so some of these, there's a couple of questions on here that are more long form because we dug deeper in through Instagram, but a lot of them are quick. Like, you know, they put the question in this little sticker thingy. Mm-hmm. Which has a limited amount of characters, but they were enough to know what they're talking about here. So
yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So let's read this first one. She's worried about making vendor decisions with so many options and high costs. And when she wrote that, I said, can you elaborate? And this is what she said. Costs have gone up significantly in DC, where I live. So Washington, DC, I think. I struggle with anxiety around whether I am picking the right vendors because everything costs more than I thought it would, which has made decision-making challenging. For example, transportation from the hotel/venue and back is $5,000. We've set up a budget based on priorities. Good job. This is amazing. I'm very proud of you, listener. And I am confident in our decisions for our top priority items. Top priorities are catering and band. What I get a lot of anxiety about is the areas of the budget that we are spending less on, but still have importance. For example, potentially using an associate photographer, using a free room for getting ready that's 30 minutes away from the venue instead of close, and you know, it causing a delay in the timeline. So this is very common in wedding planning, Justine. I don't know if you want to make any comments with regard to handling anxiety in general.
Yeah, sure. Well, I would say this listener overall, it sounds like you're very anxious about all these details, right? There's so many details that go into wedding planning. It's unbelievable. And then you add cost to it. And then there's questions of, is this the right decision, right? This is a decision-making challenge. And when we're anxious, we're tricked into thinking every decision has 100% importance. Like our anxious brain wants us to think every decision you make about this is going to matter so much. And if you make the wrong decision, you're going to screw something up. And I want to tell you, that is your anxiety talking, right? Our anxiety wants you. It has been designed to have you think about all of the worst case scenarios. It doesn't practice discernment about this is a big decision, this is a small decision, this matters, this doesn't. It thinks every decision is going to matter and every decision you make or don't make is going to have this worst case scenario. You're going to catastrophize, right? And then it's the what ifs. What if I do have this associate? What if I don't? What if we get ready 30 minutes away? What if I don't? That is so overwhelming. And if we were to pluck you out of wedding planning zone, maybe you're a person that's a little bit more chill and relaxed about making decisions. Maybe you're not. Maybe you've always been anxious. You have to ask yourself, have you always been really anxious about making decisions? And is this wedding planning exacerbating that anxiety, right? So the thing is, I wish we had crystal balls. Like, I can't tell you how many times people come into my office and they sit on my couch and the conversation is about making some kind of decision. And our brains have convinced us that there's a right decision and there's a wrong decision in the circumstance. And most of the time, it's neutral. There's no right or wrong answer here, but the anxiety makes us think that there is. So we can't predict the future. We can't make a decision based on what we hope would happen or fear would happen. We have to make a decision based on the information we have right now in this moment. Get really present with what you know about these decisions in the moment and use that to help guide you. What do you think, Michelle?
I think that's really great advice. And what the parts of this that I can advise on are the money part of things and the budgeting and feeling worried about making decisions based on budget, right? And this is interesting because I recently got a question from a listener and I answered on TikTok. By the way, everybody listening, if you're following me on TikTok, I am starting to answer questions there. So it's at the Big Wedding Planning Pod. That's where it ends because TikTok didn't give me any more characters. Actually, there's no the. So it's at Big Wedding Planning Pod. Big Wedding Planning Pod. But anyway, somebody wrote to me that they were feeling guilty and constantly compelled to limit money when it comes to the wedding budget because she and her partner are so frigging disciplined about money. They're in their 30s. They're both professionals. They make good money. They are buying a home. They are saving for retirement. Like, they're doing all of these really adulting things and being responsible with wedding planning, but it's making her feel bad because she doesn't want to spend a lot of money on the wedding itself. And then she keeps feeling like guilty about this because every decision she's making is because even though she could have a bigger budget, she's choosing not to, right? And so so many questions that I get, Justine, are centered around budget. And even if you look on Google, it's the number one searched wedding term. How can I save money? How can I save money? How can I save money? Because people just don't have, you know, unlimited budgets and weddings are crazy expensive. And so the first thing I want to say to this listener again is say, I'm proud of you for prioritizing. Okay. And that is your guide, and you are using your guide appropriately. And I think that if photography is not one of your top priorities, it's absolutely fine to use an associate photographer. And I can also tell you that that associate photographer, and again, you'll want to vet this person, probably is going to do an amazing job for you, because that associate photographer wants to have their own big photography business someday and charge a lot of money, right? Yes. And so they need to build their portfolio and become experienced. Will they make some mistakes on your wedding day? Probably. Are they going to be like mistakes where you're like, oh, that ruined everything? No. No. Last night I was watching my wedding video, which I've told y'all before. I had gotten it a few months back from my cousin. He had it sent. I got married in 2001, Justine. So it was literally on VHS, and my cousin had it put over onto DVD, which also is not to be.
Yes.
I don't know how I got, anyway, but I couldn't afford a videographer. Like, I had zero budget for a videographer. And my uncle, who was pretty good with one of those big, huge cameras, was my videographer. And back then, when I watched back the video, I was like, God, you know, it's not that great, you know, but whatever, like, at least I have video. Like, at one point he forgot the camera was on and he was walking around talking to people, like with the camera pointing to the floor.
So you could hear all the conversations.
You could hear. But let me tell you, my mom and my aunt and I watched that entire video last night, and it was amazing because I saw my grandmother alive. Aww. I saw my uncles. I saw my husband's grandparents, like people who are gone. And so it brought me pure fucking joy. And there were tears in our eyes, and I had zero budget. So I guess in my long way of answering this, what I want to tell you, dear listener, is that cut yourself some fucking slack, first of all. Don't be so hard on yourself. And it's okay. Not everybody, the majority of people out there planning weddings are on a tight budget, and you're going to be fine. And this is very common, and your wedding's going to be fantastic.
Yes, I agree with everything you said. And don't think that every detail matters as much as you really think it does. Whenever there's guilt, there's usually a should that precedes it. Like, I shouldn't, or I should, blah, 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 right? So like, I shouldn't be spending this much money because of this, or I should be spending that because of that. And those shoulds are usually the conditioning we're carrying with us from what's been modeled either on our families or our community or our friends. Like, just our life experiences have directly created these shoulds that are like rules in our head that we subconsciously follow. And then sometimes those shoulds are irrational because they were just passed down but really don't make sense for who you are today. So for example, like if you grew up with a low income, you were a kid in a low income family, right? There's probably a lot of conversation around budget and finances and made to feel guilty if a certain amount was spent. But let's say you're an adult who's doing well financially and you're responsible, you're still carrying the mindset of someone that's struggling financially and bringing that into your current life. And that's probably a struggle for that person.
When you're sitting with these, let's say this was, you know, someone sitting on the couch and their partner was next to them and listening to this person telling you how they're feeling, and their partner asks you, how can I help her, you know, when she gets stuck in these types of situations? And, you know, like what could a partner say or do to help?
It's a great question. So validation, I think, validate the emotion. It's one of the skills we learn as becoming trained therapist. It's like you validate the emotion that someone's having, and that automatically starts to relax somebody, right? So when you say like, oh, I understand why you feel this frustrated, or I understand why you feel this worried or anxious, when you're seen, you just start to calm down. When someone's invalidating us, we want to prove to them that we're right and we deserve this feeling that we have. So we'll be like, but this, but that. And the more invalidating a partner is, the more we get hyped up, hysterical, and want to prove our perspective. So as a partner, I would first validate what your partner's feeling, right? Whatever it is. I see why you feel so guilty. That's hard for you. What does that feel like? And then get that conversation going there. Why do you think you feel this way? Or if your partner's really like caught up in a thought spiral in frantic moment, distraction. What can we do to walk away from this thought right now? Can we go outside and take a walk? Do you want to take a break from thinking and put on an episode, like a 30-minute TV show? Like distract, support them with some distraction.
That is really good, solid advice.
Good. I hope so.
Yeah. Well, okay. And then, I mean, you may have answered this in the earlier, you know, part of this, but like if my partner is not around and I am spiraling, what can I do once I kind of realize this is happening? It's so hard to pull yourself out. You know, what could someone do?
So the biggest thing that I think helps with rumination, thought spirals, overthinking is learning to become really present, because most of the time our worries are about the future or the past. We're not really living right now. We're anticipating a horrible outcome because, again, our brain is programmed to think of the worst case scenarios. So we have to really practice what's called mindfulness, like being as present as possible. So you become more and more aware of your thoughts, right? And the more you become aware of how you're thinking, the more you can really question how you're thinking. And you can start to say your thoughts out loud and be like, I have a thought that if I spend this much amount of money, we're going to be broke for the rest of our lives. And then you want to start to challenge that thinking and say to yourself, is this thought helpful? And is this thought true? So for example, where's the evidence that you will definitely be broke if you spend this amount of money for the rest of your life? Is there evidence here to prove this to be absolutely 100% true? If not, let's toss the thought aside. Is it helpful to think that way? Well, yes, we have to be cautious. We want to have a budget. We want to think clearly about what we're spending. But what's a better way to think about this? Maybe we can frame it as, I choose to be intentional about where I put my money for this wedding so I can feel in control of my budget, right? So just by changing the wording of our thoughts can sometimes relax us and get us out of the spiral. But really the basis is being present, which I have a course called The Path to Peace, which is this mini course for anxiety management. And in there, I have 5 pillars of what I teach my one-to-one private clients. And one of those pillars is being present with mindfulness. We have to get really aware of how we're feeling and the thoughts that are related to those feelings and pick out, is this a rational thought or is this thought based on assumption or fear? And can I challenge this way I'm thinking? So if you're by yourself, my take-home tip is question, what are you thinking about? Say the thought out loud and ask yourself if the thought is helpful and or true. And if it's not either, toss the thought out. Write it on a piece of paper. I have clients that vlog by themselves. Right? They don't like journaling. They don't like writing. They'll record themselves on their camera saying the thoughts out loud, and just getting it out of their head helps them feel better.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I think that is such great advice, because the things we say in our head just roam around and like just, you know, marinate. But when you hear them out loud, even if I love that, like record yourself saying it and then go listen, go take a walk and then listen, like think, and then you're like, what? That doesn't even make sense.
No. And there's so many times I'll pick a thought that a client shares and I'll say it out loud to them. And I'll say like, you know, Charlie, you're telling me that you believe blank, and they'll laugh like, yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. And that doesn't make much sense to me, or I have a different perspective, right? So getting the thought out, whether it's talking out loud in your room, journaling it on paper, calling a friend, or just recording yourself, that can help get some perspective about whether or not you should attach to these thoughts.
And then I'll add one more wedding planning tip, because I was reading the last sentence and she says, you know, one of the things that she's kind of stressing out about is like this money savings way of using a free room to get ready, right? That's 30 minutes away from the venue. So I, in my mind, I'm like, oh, her venue probably has, it's, it might be a hotel or maybe there's a hotel nearby or an Airbnb, but because, you know, she has limited budget, the option is to go 30 minutes away and have a free room. So what can you do aside from the things that Justine said is just write out a pros and cons list with regard to this decision in particular. And just say, okay, it's 30 minutes away. What is that going to do? It's going to impact my wedding day schedule. Do I want to have getting ready photos? Do, can I, because your photographer contract might only be for 6 or 7 hours. So am I going to have to add an additional hour to my contract for the photographer? Is that going to be more expensive than paying for the room that is on site? You know, things like this, just weigh out your decisions and all the possibilities and write them down. Leave it, walk away, take a wedding planning break, okay, and then come back to it. And love some of advice. These decisions don't have to be made right now, by the way, you know, and sometimes if we wait a little bit, things might change in our budget. You know what I mean? Like that associate photographer might be like, hey, if you hire me, I will give you 8 hours for the price of 6. And then you're like, whoa, I just saved money. I'm going to go rent that room or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Or like now I have more money for that, you know, that transportation budget, which is putting me over and stressing me out. Ooh, now I feel better. I'm so glad I didn't stress about it 2 months ago. Right?
I love that advice.
All right. That was a good one.
That was a good one.
Okay. Somebody wrote to me and said, my wedding is over. But the biggest anxiety was about money, which they all are, and the pressure to look good. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a good one. Yes. Ooh, that's a good one. It's not good. I mean, but like, it's a big one. You know, why do you think there's all these, you know, workout programs that are literally geared toward people getting married? Do you know how many of those I turned down on a weekly basis, asking me to be a guest on the podcast?
Really?
Oh yeah. Yes. And if there is no sense of a message of body positivity anywhere on their website or on their social media, I'm an automatic no, because there is so much pressure on us, on these people mm-hmm. right now that are listening to, oh my God, I gotta look good. I gotta lose weight, or I want to tone my arms, or, you know, whatever it is, there's so much pressure.
It's so sad, but it's real, right? There's the should again, like I should be the thinnest I'll ever be on my wedding day, or the prettiest I'll be on my wedding day. Guess what? You're going to look fucking beautiful that day, no matter what size you are, no matter if your arms or legs are toned, right? You are going to be feeling so great. And you're going to have this moment that you've chosen with your partner. You're going to look beautiful. You spent time on the dress, the hair, the makeup. No one is sitting there, hopefully, I don't think so, judging and nitpicking your body in the way that you do in your own head. Nobody. Nobody. But the pressure is real, right? And it's sold to us, like you're saying, like people are really good at selling the wedding diet, the wedding packages. Like they want to sell because they want to make their money. Of course, they know you will buy it because this is a huge event that you're paying money for in other ways too, right? So, and I think it's also another sense of control. If I can control what I'm eating, if I can control what I look like, I feel more in control. And if I'm in more control, I feel less anxious and stressed. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I had it too, and I still do. And you know, something that I was going to share a little something, this is kind of weird, but like I've always had a belly. Like I've never had a flat stomach in my life ever, mm-hmm. ever. But especially after I had two kids, Mm-hmm. Right. And I had 2 C-sections. Mm-hmm. And so like I have this scar and I have this, what I call a shelf in my belly. And I've always hated it. And my husband, over the course of the last couple of years, for some reason, it's so funny, has gotten really obsessed with my little belly here. And he loves it. He loves it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, it's awful. He's like, no, I love it. I love it so much. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I've learned to embrace it. Like, I've always said, like, I'm going to get the mommy thing. I'm going to get a tuck, or I'm going to get a, you know, all these things. And I'm like, I don't want to put myself through that. And I feel like that's just kind of like almost this revolution that is happening for many people of all ages, where, you know, accepting ourselves for what we look like and how we were born and our genes, not the jeans, not the denim, but the genes, you know, and like when it's your wedding day, I get it. Like, these photos are going to last beyond your lifetime.
Right.
And be passed down to your family members. But it's like with the hair and makeup, I always say, like, don't go crazy on your hair and makeup. Like, you should look like you.
Yeah.
To be honest and true to the future generations that are going to see you and not know you.
Yeah. Great point. And they're family heirlooms, these albums. And
they are 100% family heirlooms. And maybe someday your great grandchild will be displaying your wedding photo at their wedding.
Yes. I love that perspective.
But just circling back, you know, issues around our body and our confidence and our, or lack of, is huge. Eating disorders, you know, all of this, it's so prominent in our society, and it's so difficult to navigate through and deal with. And I don't know if you deal with that in your practice.
So I don't specialize with eating disorders. I mm-hmm. refer out, because that's really specialized training that I didn't take on. And I do see a lot of body image issues, and I see a lot of disordered eating, right? So that comes up, right? I work with a lot of women, and a lot of women can relate to this. And it's tough, and it can consume you, right? Certain times it can consume us. It could be all we think about, and we have guilt about what we're eating and if we're working out enough. A lot of that, again, is being really aware of how you're talking to yourself. What is your self-talk? How are you speaking to your body when you look in the mirror? How are you speaking to your body when you try on the wedding dress for your fittings? Pay attention to that, and then start to affirm yourself, right? Consciously affirm, wow, I look beautiful in this dress. Wow, I what do you like about your body? What are you going to feel good about that day? What do you feel good about your body right now? What did you feel good about your body before getting engaged? What does your partner love about your body, right? So really become aware of affirming yourself. And sometimes that's gratitude too, like saying what you're grateful for about your body before you go to bed at night, right? What are you grateful for that your body has done for you over time? So changing your thought patterns, bringing awareness to how you're talking to yourself, and talk to yourself like you would talk to your best friend if it was their wedding day, and make a conscious effort. Would you be saying these things to your best friend on their wedding day? No effing way.
Or to anyone on their wedding day, for that matter. Yes. You wouldn't be an asshole like that.
No, we're assholes to ourselves. Yes.
You know, something that my friend, my Christy, used to say to me, and I've actually adopted this as well. Like, if we were talking and we'd be working, and I'd be like, oh, Michelle, you idiot. And she'd be like, don't talk to my friend like that. And I'd be like, oh, you're right. I can't
love that.
You know, like, I wouldn't say that to anyone else but myself. Why do we mm-hmm. say these things to ourselves?
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's a good example. Yeah. But we're awful to ourselves. We really are. And listen, there's no magic thing you or I can say to a listener right now that's going to make them feel 100% better or confident about their body if they're struggling with body image issues. But it's putting an effort for the opportunity for you to start to gain more confidence and security. And that is talking to yourself in a better way, and not making yourself fall into the shoulds. I should weigh this much on my wedding day. My body should look like this. I should only eat that. Those are really rigid rules that are not sustainable and are going to create so much more stress than you need.
Yep. That's a big one. Yeah. Okay, this is another big one. The most stressful part has been dealing with my mom. No matter what decisions I make, they are wrong. How do I deal with her and the anxiety that comes from her criticism?
Mm.
Ooh, that could go to those things we say to ourselves that we were just talking about, right?
Yes.
But moms, man, in weddings, ooh, mamas.
Yes. Weddings are this time. Actually, I love this question because it feeds into like a lot of my training about families and family systems and the life cycle, right? Weddings are about you, right? It's your wedding, but they have a piece with everybody else in your family because it's a life cycle change for everybody, right? So it's your life cycle change. You're getting partnered up and moving into this exciting next phase of your life, but you're someone's daughter or son, and to your parents, their daughter or son's getting married. That's a life cycle change. Wow, now I have a married child, right? It's part of your sibling's life cycle change. Wow, my brother or sister, they're married now. So it's such a huge event that triggers so many emotions. And because it does impact everybody in your family, everyone starts to feel like they have a piece in decision-making, or they deserve to give their input because selfishly, you know, subconscious or not, with the selfishness, they want to make it a little bit about them too, because it is a little bit about them too, right? Mother of the bride, it's your daughter. This is a big moment. Father of the bride or groom, like these are big moments for your parents too. So it triggers a lot of reactions. And to this listener, I'm sorry that it's criticism. I wish you had some more support. That feels so judgmental, that can trigger so much stress and anxiety for you. But this comes up often. And what's interesting too, if there's any history of relationship dynamics with your parents, whether it's with each other or with you, a wedding will bring that to the surface for sure, because sometimes there's dynamics around money and budget. Are they helping pay? Are they not helping pay? If your mother has been critical about your appearance your whole life, she's going to definitely be critical about your appearance on your wedding day. You know, so we just see all these dynamics come to the surface. I can share a little personally about me and my wedding, and I shared this with you, Michelle. When I got engaged, my parents decided they were going to get divorced. Oh, isn't that fun, right? So they were married like 37 years, and they were struggling in their marriage leading up to my wedding. But literally, I got engaged on Christmas Eve, and that following March, they announced, like, we're separating, we're getting divorced. And that was hard because I was in the throe of wanting this peaceful time for everybody. And this became a time where my family was divided. My dad is a lifelong alcoholic. He's in recovery now and addict. And at the time, his alcoholism and addiction was raging, that my parents could not be in the same room. It was so bad. Listeners, I didn't have my father at my wedding. My father could not walk me down the aisle.
Okay. This is big, by the way, Justine. I'm glad you're sharing this because I can't tell you how many listeners write to me about this. So sorry to interrupt, but I want to emphasize this is big. Thank you for this.
Yeah, no, you know, it's a personal story that I think a lot of people can relate to. And no one wants to talk about the nastiness behind a wedding. It's there, right? So yeah, I had to make this decision of not having my father at my wedding and not having him walk me down the aisle. My brother walked me down. My brother did the dance with me. Tears were in the room, you know, not a dry eye. Because I had to set a boundary for myself that day because the state of my parents' relationship was so bad. And at the time, my dad's alcoholism and addiction was so bad that it would have not had any benefit to have him there at the time. And that had a trickle down effect to, like, you know, obviously my dad's side of the family and my dad's friends. And I had to really just stay laser focused on what I could tolerate that day. And I had such a fear that that dynamic and divorce and everything going on was going to ruin the day and distract from what really needed to happen. So long story short, We're reconciled now. He is sober. We have a relationship. We have discussed his absence, and it's painful for both of us that he couldn't be there. But it was hard to do, but I had to do it.
Did you have, I mean, was there a moment that you had to tell him, I can't have you at my wedding?
Kind of, you know, he was so into his alcoholism and addiction that I kind of felt like he probably even forgot the date. And as it got closer, like, cause he wasn't living with my mom and we weren't seeing him, you know, as it got closer and closer, I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to ask or bring this up. And like, I obviously never sent a formal invitation or had any conversations with him. We were pretty much cut off from him for the most part. Because that's what needed to happen. I think it was like maybe 3 weeks before a friend of his like mentioned the wedding and my dad had sent me a text about it. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't have you here. I can't have you there that day. But I never reminded him of the date. And then I had these fears like, will he show up? What will that be like?
Right, right.
Really make an appearance,
like be out of his mind and just show up totally messed up and ruin things
to the point where I was like talking to my mom, should I hire someone to be at the door?
Yeah.
And no, he didn't do that. Right. And I don't know if I'll have to ask him if he remembered what the date was for that to be a risk, but he was just so into the throes of drinking and using that. I think it honestly slipped his mind. He didn't have an awareness.
Right. Yeah.
He was in the right mind.
He wasn't thinking about anybody at that time.
No, no. But it's painful for him now, and it's painful for me now too.
Well, yeah, because those photos that we talked about a little while ago, he's not there.
No.
And that's a shame, but also, could you imagine if he was there?
It would be worse. And yeah. Moments leading up, like I remember getting my wedding gown with my friend, like bridesmaids and mom. And like I came out and there's this moment. I'm like, yeah, this is the dress. This is the one. And my mom cried because it wasn't happy tears. It was like, wow, your dad was supposed to be here this day. Like I had picked that date for him to be there. Right. So there was a lot of loss that we were experiencing even leading up to the big moment. You know, those events that you want your parents there for. Unfortunately, not everyone, you know, I know your listeners, not everyone listening has two parents that are alive, two parents that are healthy, two parents that are mentally well, right? There's so much behind this that adds to the stress. But I had to throw that in there because how did we get there? We're talking about this person's mother, right? And how family can make it stressful. And I hear you. I hear you.
I know there's people listening right now thinking, I'm so happy that she shared this because I'm dealing with this right now. It is heartbreaking how many people I hear from that are dealing with this. Or, you know, whether it's there's an addiction, there's a mental illness, there's, you know, just like never got along, terrible childhood, don't even speak to him. Why would I even have him there or her? It's just so difficult. And that's why I always say weddings bring things up that you normally wouldn't have to deal with or want to deal with, but you are forced to deal with it now. You have to.
So this person's question is, how do I deal with my mom and the anxiety that comes from her criticism? Boundaries. You have to set consistent boundaries, even if they're uncomfortable for you. If you can't take one more criticism from your mother, you have to have a polite, assertive conversation saying, Mom, sometimes your feedback makes me feel more insecure than I need right now. And could you help me out by just giving me positive support at this time?
And then mom says, I cannot believe you're saying this to me right now. I have always been good. I've tried my best. And you're just trying to make me feel bad. And you're just this and that. And then it turns into this whole big argument.
Don't take the bait, right? It's easy to take the bait. Mom, I'm sorry you feel that way. But right now, your criticism is really stressful for me. And, you know, I would appreciate this weekend when you come help me try on my wedding gown that you only give me some positive support.
Well, and fine, then I won't go. I won't go then. If I'm so terrible, I won't go.
Well, Mom, I would love for you to go. And I'm not saying you're terrible. I'm saying right now I'm vulnerable. And some of your feedback upsets me. And so I would appreciate it if you could come. Maybe you can think about it and we'll talk about it the day before. Guarantee you're going to hang up the phone and cry. And so is your mother. And you're going to be anxious, nervous, devastated if she doesn't come. But I have a feeling that she probably would. And I have a feeling she's always been this way. It's not just the wedding planning, but now you're forced to deal with it, like you're saying, Michelle, during the wedding planning. So we have, and boundaries are hard to set. And sometimes we have to set little baby ones before we can get better and better at them.
I've learned, it took me 40 years, how to silently kind of set some boundaries by limiting interaction with family members and not saying like, you know, are you ever in this, I know I can't be the only one that does this. People that drive you up a fucking wall and make you crazy and you just are so irritated and angry with. I used to have these conversations when I was in the shower with that person.
It's always the shower.
It's always the shower.
It's always the shower.
And I'd be like, and she's going to say this, and I'm going to say this, and I am really going to tell her what I think. She's got to hear this. You know what I mean?
And it's just like, feels good.
It feels good. And then I'll catch myself and go, oh my God, I hope nobody's listening. My husband's probably like, I need to call an ambulance because she's losing it. But those conversations, oftentimes those should never come to fruition and they're not going to be helpful. And so if you learn to set your own boundaries and not even tell the person, some people you cannot reason with. There are just some people on this planet that cannot see reason.
Then you set the boundary with yourself, right?
Right.
You say, I'm not going to let this affect me today. My mother is my mother, and this is who she is. No matter what I do, my whole life, she's criticized me. Even now, she's such a blah, 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 narcissist, bitch, whatever you want to say in your head. And you know what? That's her issue, not mine, and I'm not going to respond to her. So then you say, thank you, Mom, for your feedback. Done. Thank you, Mom, for your feedback. I see what you're saying. But just because she says it doesn't mean you have to do it. So you set the boundary with yourself and say, she's not going to change, but I can change how I react to her. And if I react to her the same way every time and I get a bad result every time and feel like shit, then react to her a new way. Set the boundary with yourself then instead of her.
Yes.
Great point, Michelle. Great point.
Thank you. And thank you for articulating it properly. I think one of our biggest issues, and I'm not talking about my mother, by the way, other family members, that you constantly wish they would change. Why? Why can't he see how he's acting? Why can't he just for once, blah, 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 blah. And it's me stressing out. That person's not stressing out. That person's fine. They know who they are. It's me wanting them to be a different person. Why? That's who they are.
Yes. Some of the hardest work in therapy, and I've been a victim of this too, right? I'm a therapist, but I go to therapy. I have a therapist. And some of the best moments is when my therapist is like, you keep telling me about this person, but what are you going to do about it? And I'm like, ah. F you, Ruth. I want to talk more shit
about
them.
You have a Dr. Ruth. You have Dr. Ruth.
Yes, I have Ruth. And it's like, I want to talk more shit about these people. I feel good. But it's like, it gets to a point where you're like, okay, you've spent a lot of time complaining and doing nothing. You are not going to change this person. You have to change how you have to react to this person. So I've experienced that as the client, but it's a great moment in therapy with my clients where they get to start to shift and see that, like, okay, we know that this person's this way. What are you going to do about it? You have to change how you react to them and set boundaries with your time that you spend with them, how much you talk to them, and what you believe that comes out of their mouth. And if they're constantly putting you down, that's a them issue, not a you issue.
Boom. There's your answer. That's how you deal with with her and the anxiety that comes from her criticism, because the anxiety is your reaction to her action.
Yes.
And you can only control your reaction. And I hate when somebody tells me that, but it's fucking true.
I hate it.
Okay. I knew we were going to, this was going to be a long one. Okay. These two are kind of similar, Justine. And yes. I know this happens to a lot of people. The first one says, how to wind down at the end of the day and stop planning. The second one says, how to sleep when your mind is racing. I feel like these are both the same, but worded differently.
Yes. Well, this is so common, right? If we're going to worry, it's going to be at night, in the dark, in silence, when you have nothing around to stimulate you but your own thoughts. So yes, this is so common that nighttime is awful for overthinking and ruminating, right? So you want to try a little bit of a routine. What will your wind down routine be? And give yourself permission, again, say it out loud, you know, at 9 o'clock every night, I'm going to take my shower and I'm going to put on my face cream and I'm going to watch my favorite funny show and I'm not going to think about planning. And then you personify, I'm big with personification. I like to turn emotions into people and thoughts into people and stressors into people. So I want you to make a wedding planning monster maybe, right? And you name your wedding planning monster, whatever you want, Barbara, Karen, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, Barbara's here. The wedding planning monster's back. I don't want you here, Barbara. You're useful to me in the morning when I'm focused and I'm my best self. But 9 o'clock at night when I'm watching my favorite show, like, fuck you for coming in. I'm trying to enjoy myself. Barbara, get out. Right? So I love personifying our feelings, our thoughts, our stressors, because then we get to control a little bit when we want to listen to them, engage with them. So create your wedding planning monster. Give it a name. And whenever he or she or it shows up, talk to it. Oh, you're here again. I know you're here to help me. You want me to have the best wedding. Thank you, Barbara. But you're just doing nothing but annoying me. So come back tomorrow morning when I'm in a better headspace. And then redirect yourself to the little routine. And that could be different for everybody.
That is so freaking good.
You think so?
Yes.
I'm glad.
I wonder if it's the wedding planning monster or is it your alter ego or whoever it is. But Barb, I'm sorry. You need to go to your room now. It's my time. It's my time.
Yes. And you got to be thankful for Barb. She's helping you plan. She's got good points.
Sure.
But she's no use at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night when you're trying to sleep. You need your beauty sleep.
Right.
Ooh. But you do need the routine to pair up with this wedding planning monster. So you need to do the things that feel good, that get you in that relaxed state of mind. So maybe it's the shower, maybe it's the favorite show, maybe you're watching it with your partner, maybe you have a nighttime tea, maybe you can meditate. There's so many things. I have a client that does puzzles at night. That helps them refocus. People like to read. People like to color, believe it or not, like a kid's coloring book just to help their mind like flow through the thoughts and refocus.
That was really popular for a while, but it really is nice to just like color.
Yes.
I'll throw one in there. Like if I needed that, I would tell Jose Luis, I would say, just so you know, I cannot do any more wedding planning tonight. I need my time. Can you please make sure, help me to not open that freaking binder or look at my to-do list? It's done. I can't look at it anymore. It's stressing me out, babe. I need your help. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, call, you know, phone a friend or whatever it is.
Yes. I love that. Because you set a boundary with yourself.
Yes. You have to set your boundaries with others and with yourself. Yes. Oh my God. So good. All right. Last one is a big one. This is someone who DM'd me on Instagram and we expanded here. And I have heard from this listener before. She is planning a wedding where it's two totally different cultures. Okay. And so this is another big, big, big source of frustration, anxiety, stress is when you come from a culture that is quite different than the culture here in the United States. And this is where you're living, and this is where your family is living, but you were brought up a certain way. And weddings are always done a certain way. And your partner is not part of our culture. And why couldn't you have married somebody within our, you know, our culture? It's real. It's huge. It happens so much. And this is difficult. Okay. So the first thing she said to me was, how do I deal with my dad not attending the wedding because he doesn't like my fiance?
Ooh.
And then she went on to say, my dad has never liked anyone I've brought home. And my family thinks in his mind that no one will ever be good enough. It was mostly due to him wanting me to have a career, but I am 34 and very solidly in the career of my dreams now. I am marrying a wonderful, kind, smart, and successful man next year. My dad has been kind of grasping at straws for a reason not to like him and has been very against him from the start. He recently seemed to decide he didn't respect him professionally and gave that as a reason to not attend my wedding next year. He says it's for my own benefit, to take away the negativity, and doesn't seem to understand why I want him there. We've had a relationship my whole life, and my parents are together, so this seems very odd. He is acting uncharacteristically illogically, so it seems that I need to find a way within myself to be able to enjoy and be grateful for all of my loved ones who will be there. How can I frame this to myself to avoid having this decision stain otherwise joyful experiences? He may end up showing up, but I need to be okay with him not being there, or at least okay enough to appreciate all of the joy in the day. Thank you for any insight. This breaks my frigging heart, man.
Me too. It's sad. And before you gave me some cultural context on this, I was like so reactive to this father. And I'm like, how dare you? This is awful, right? But I don't know what the cultural beliefs and value systems are.
And again,
this.
I say this because she didn't allude to this in this DM, but her and I have had DMs prior to where I know that she's of one culture and her family and ways to do fusion things for the wedding. Maybe I'm assuming it has something to do with it. And maybe that's wrong of me. But I've dealt with a lot of this in my decades of planning weddings. So I don't know. Maybe I should, I don't know. But regardless, what is your answer?
Yeah. So I'm writing down a few notes. This is an extremely rigid reaction from your father, right? My way or the highway, right? I control who you marry. And if you don't marry who I want you to, I will refuse to be present, right? This just is a red flag for some of my training in psychology of in families, there's this process of differentiation, where hopefully we all come to a point where we love each other unconditionally, but we know we are our own people with our own brains who can make our own decisions as adults. And right now, what this listener is sharing, it sounds like there's a lot of enmeshment, what we call enmeshment and fusion between a parent and child, where a parent really views the child as a direct extension of them, and any decisions that that child makes is a reflection of them, and they're too intertwined and they can't separate from it. So this father is having a really hard time differentiating himself from his daughter's life, right? This is my daughter's decision. I have to trust that she's capable of making her own good decisions for herself. And this father's clearly enmeshed and fused with this daughter. And maybe, I don't know if there's other children and how this plays out with any other kids. Maybe all of them would have the same feeling, but maybe it's just one child here. So it's extremely rigid. It's extremely intertwined. Unfortunately, I think this listener does have to let it go, right? This listener cannot control whether or not their father attends this wedding and has to try and make peace with the idea, like they're saying, that their father may choose not to. And unfortunately, I think this is going to be the catalyst for a lot more work to come, because what if one day you decide, like, will this father be involved in the future with holidays with this spouse, if there's children down the line. Like, I hate to say it, but I think this is the catalyst for a lot of future issues with this father. And I think that says more about father than it does about this listener. This is so unfortunate.
It's unfortunate and it's unfair and it's frustrating. Exactly what you're saying. Like, I talk about how, like, this is a huge life event, right? And we're planning this wedding with our partners. And like, I talk about how, if you were going to choose an ideal partner, make sure it's somebody that, you know, you could really be a team with. You know, we fall in love with people. But when you're planning your wedding, you're like, oh, I can now foresee into the future how things will be when we get pregnant, when we buy our first home together, when we, you know, when our teenager, you know, sneaks out in the middle of the night and we have to decide how we're going to deal with this as a team, right? Like, all of these future events. But this is with her dad, who seemingly up until now has had a great relationship with, and her man that she's in love with, that she loves and respects. Like, that is so freaking difficult. I remember when I was younger, my dad would refuse to call my husband by his first name. Mm. He would literally say, you know, what's his name? Your husband. Mm-hmm. You know, what's his name? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, Dad, you know his fucking name. Like, why are you saying that? And then I'd like try to like protect my husband from the way my dad was acting. And it was so difficult. And it wasn't until we had our first child that he would start calling my husband by his first name. I mean, how weird is that, right?
Interesting. It's like he gained the respect then.
It's like he gained his respect then. But until then, this dad has no idea the friction this is going to cause between these two individuals going into a marriage together. Like, it's going to be so hard when the parents say, come over for dinner, because her husband can rightly say, you know what? I'm not going to go to your parents' house for dinner. Your dad couldn't come to our wedding. Clearly, he wants nothing to do with me. Why would I go to his house? And what a position to put this woman into, your daughter, for who knows how long. It's just awful. And it's like, how do you navigate that with your partner now, right? Like, how do you handle that as a woman with your partner going forward in your relationship?
It's horrible. And I'm also thinking, like, A, how selfish of the father, and B, like, does he think he has the power to determine who she marries? Clearly he does.
I think he thinks if he holds out long enough, she'll change her mind.
Yes. Yes. And that's really narcissistic.
Isn't it?
And I don't want to throw out labels. I don't know this father, but this is extremely narcissistic.
Very narcissistic. Honey, girl.
I feel for you. Let it go. As difficult, you know, a lot of our suffering is holding on. There's something called radical acceptance. When we decide to accept a situation for what it is, no matter how much it pisses us off, no matter how much we disagree with it, hate it,
yep,
we have to accept it. This is it. This is the acceptance that you need right now. Accept that you can't change your dad. He may not come to your wedding. There's nothing you can do about it. And once we accept, we kind of let things go. We're not agreeing with it, but we're letting it go from taking up that much space in our day-to-day. And now you can refocus yourself on the other things that are really important to you. But this isn't going to end at the wedding. This is, go to therapy. You need to go to therapy.
Go to therapy. For sure. And go to therapy with your partner.
Yes.
And go separately.
Yes, because there's your own family of origin issue here going on. And then it's going to show up with your couple relationship too.
But you're right. When you just accept things, whether or not you think you should or want to, it does release. It does give you some space and some calm, some mm-hmm. peace, mm-hmm. Just a little bit more, which is better than nothing.
Yes.
That you just accept. Listen, this is, I know he's wrong. And it's hard. You're like, oh my God, he's my dad. But he's wrong.
He's wrong.
He is wrong. This is wrong.
100% wrong.
And, you know, maybe he'll give in at the last minute. And if he does, it'll be lovely for him to be there. But you're going to have to plan around this now. You might even, from a wedding planner, if I was your wedding planner, I would say, okay, just between the two of us, we're going to create two wedding day schedules. One is going to be based off of father-daughter dance and one is not. Mm-hmm. One is going to have a room for a toast for, you know, if your dad wants to say something, one is not. And just prepare for those two scenarios. Have that in your pocket. Put it away. And then continue with plan A. That's what I would do. That's what I would tell her as a planner. Like,
amazing feedback. Plan B and plan A.
Yeah. I'm sorry, honey. I just want to give everybody who responded like huge props, much love, virtual hugs. I wish I could just go there and like absolve everyone of all of this bullshit.
Me too. Me too. And I'm so happy to participate in trying to help with some of the listeners' questions. This stuff isn't easy.
It's not easy. And thank you. It's nice to have someone who's a professional talk about this. Because I always say, like, I am not trained or a professional in any of this. But I constantly get these questions, Justine. Like, I constantly try to help people. So you're helping me too. Just to kind of like know how to answer or like what to suggest. And I do suggest visiting Justine's website, which is carinocounseling.com. And then, you know, listening to your podcast and maybe getting in touch with you. You're wonderful. And I'm really appreciative for you being here today with us.
I'm so honored. I'm happy to be the psychotherapist today. And I hope listeners gain a little bit from this conversation. And if they feel like they need more support with any anxiety management, reach out. If you want to do a 7-day mini course, take the Path to Peace. It can give you some of these foundational anxiety management skills we talked about.
The Path to Peace. Okay, we'll link to that on the show notes too.
Perfect.
Thank you, Justine.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Bye.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. You can get more wedding planning tips from the Big Wedding Planning Podcast YouTube channel. Follow us on Instagram at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast and be sure to use the hashtag #PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join me and our amazing members. Just search the Big Wedding Planning Podcast community on Facebook. Have a wedding planning question? Or just want to get in touch? You can email me at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com or my personal favorite, call and leave a voicemail at 415-723-1625 and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Love you. Love the show. Bye.